Join us as we gather around the hedge, where we dig into technology, business, and culture with the finest minds in computer networking.
Well, hello, Tom. How are you today?
Doing fine. How about you, Russ?
Fine, fine. Books with bookcases with lots of books in the background there.
Yeah,
lots
the printer is gone. Books. The printer is gone now. So.
Oh, okay. It's gone, gone. I was actually talking to somebody yesterday, and they said they just don't have a printer anymore. They just got rid of it because who prints? And it's just another device in my house that's yet another security threat and or, you know, an attack surface that I don't need in my house. And I print once a year. And I was thinking the other day when they said that every time I print now, I have to clean the print nozzles because I print so rarely that the nozzles are clogged up every time I print. So maybe it's time for me to do the same thing. Maybe it's time for me just to haul the printer out to the trash can and say enough is enough. I don't use the thing. I use it more as a scanner, and I have other scanners. I don't need that as a scanner. So today we're joined by Tim Fiola. Did I say that right, Tim?
Yeah, Fiola's fine. Thank you.
All right. And Tim is in Denver, Colorado, I think, right? And he has an awesome Imperial War Cruiser behind him, along with some other models that I can't see back there, but I assume they're Star Wars related.
A lot of Star Wars related paraphernalia back here.
Well, I see a Walker, right?
Indeed.
Yep. So there you go. So today the topic of discussion is Pi NTM. So I think we're going to start with Tim and just say, Tim, where did this start? I mean, describe for us how it started and then tell us a little bit about what it is. I don't know whether to start with what it is or how it started. So start wherever
sure.
you want to.
Let me start with what it is. It's an open source wide area network modeling engine. And what does that mean? Well, the use cases around it are to understand how your WAN, your wide area network, is going to behave in a failover situation. Where is the traffic going to go? Where are the LSPs going to go? Are some of the RSVP LSPs, if they exist, are they going to be able to signal for the bandwidth they want? Are they going to be able to signal at all? When in a wide area network at scale, these questions become non-trivial. And a model is the only way to solve a lot of these problems, or at least to understand them.
So are there commercial products?
Yeah, there are a few commercial products that do this. Keradin, then they got absorbed by Cisco. Now it's Cisco Way, the WAN automation engine. Juniper has a North Star. And there's Aria Networks also used to have something like this. I'm not sure if they still do. But yeah, there are commercial products out there that do this. My thought, you know, this whole thing started with just when I was at Cisco working for the former Keradin entity, I started to learn Python and, this just in general just started because I wanted to learn how to use classes and describe network objects using classes. That's how it started. It wasn't a real serious project. No, not a lot of code was really written until I discovered NetworkX. Which is an open source pathfinding suite of software for finding paths across graphs. Once I found NetworkX, I had a real pathfinding engine that I could build network state around. And that's what PyNTM does, is it takes your network as a graph and then finds paths and then builds network state around it.
So you didn't get into pathfinding until you found this other module. What was the name of it again?
It's called NetworkX.
Okay. So it's interesting because that sounds like it just runs SPF. Is that a fair?
Yeah. Yeah. It'll find your paths and it can use different algorithms, but the paths looks like they all remain the same. So no matter the algorithm used to find them. So yeah, once I had a reliable pathfinding algorithm that I stumbled upon, I realized I had the skill set and now a pathfinding algorithm and the experience in the modeling industry, the network modeling industry, that is, to make this a real thing. So I just started work on it, again, mainly to be engaged with Python, but I soon realized that there was actual value here, and I decided to open source it.
So is it an online type tool like the ones you've described, Wandle and Northstar? They can plug into your IGP and learn stuff off the network dynamically. Does this operate like that, or is it more of an offline tool?
Yeah, let me take a step back and describe a little bit more what it does, qualify that a bit more. So this is the modeling engine. As a user, you would need to find your IGP topology and put it in the right format for the modeling engine to consume it, which is not terribly difficult, but this does not do that for you at this time. So the engine takes as an input a file that one describes your topology, meaning your nodes, your interfaces, your IGP costs, any LSPs that are present, their attributes, which are fairly trivial to gather. And then it also takes a traffic matrix as another input in the same file. And what the engine does is it just routes the traffic across the topology, just like a real network would. And in doing that, produces a simulation. And the power there comes when you can do really cool stuff like, all right, let me go ahead and fail a link. How does the traffic fail over? How do the LSPs behave when a link has failed or when a node has failed or whatever, a series of those things? That's where the real power comes in, because understanding that behavior is not something you can do intuitively necessarily at a scaled network.
Right, right.
So you gather this information, and what format is it in? Is it something that you've just thrown together, or is it something that...
Well, the information for the topology needs to be gathered from the network, but the file itself that it goes into is just a CSV file.
Okay. So the CSV file is just information about, like, what is it, something similar to an LSP database? Is that what it would be? Is that what you would relate it to?
Sort of. It's real similar in that, in the input file, there's a field for the LSP name, for the source, the destination, any static setup bandwidth, if you want to set it statically. And then from there, the simulator just takes that and runs the simulation with it. So there's not a whole lot necessarily to describing an LSP that's not readily available.
Okay. So you tell us a little bit about the history about this, how you got into it. So tell us a little bit about how it's implemented. You said it's in Python, yes. But are there particular modules? What does the implementation look like from a perspective of somebody who's just looking at the code to understand?
So the implementation in Python, if I'm understanding your question properly, Russ, is it's downloadable as just a package from PyPI. So if you just do a pip3 import or pip3 install PyNTM, you'll have the modules ready to go inside your Python environment. You can also download the GitHub repository, which has some advantages because then you get a bunch of example files and a bunch of other stuff that might help you understand how to use it with, examples are always nice. So that is how it's actually implemented. And then from there, you just set off to either loading your file or just starting to freeform create these network objects. But at scale, okay, You'd probably use an input file.
Right.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah, is it, so you say it's just in Python, right?
It is just in Python, yeah. Yep.
Okay. And so if somebody were to look for this, what would they load it on? Is this something you would just load onto a bare metal server of some type? Is that what you're getting at that these people might use?
Yeah, so, it'll run on any platform that runs Python. Now, I have noticed that the better your platform, the faster, the better performance you get from the software. Meaning, and when I say performance, I mean time it takes to converge. Because just like a real network, to produce a simulation, the model has to converge. It has to route all the LSPs if they're present. It has to route all the traffic. It has to do auto bandwidth calculations. Doing all that does take time. For a larger model, hundreds and hundreds of nodes, tens of thousands of label switch paths, that will take more time on a slow computer like the computer I develop on, versus if you're running it for real, you'd want to run it on a more performant machine.
Okay, so what class of machines are we talking about to say the performant? Are we talking about you know ARM? Are we talking about
it'll run
not a Raspberry Pi?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't do a Raspberry Pi. No, no, unless you can geniusly string them together to get a bunch of performance out of them. No, I mean like you know just you know I converge large models on my home MacBook Air. It takes a couple minutes, but they converge and you get the results. If you're using it probably in a more production style environment, I'd figure you'd want to get that, you know, use a computer that would get it down to maybe 15, 20, 30 seconds, maybe a minute. So it just really depends on the scale of your model and what your use cases are. Do you need a quick convergence or can you, is it okay if it takes a minute or two to converge? It's up to you. So in that regard, it's really flexible. You know, it'll run on what you got. It's just a matter of the performance you get. So if you, if what you have is good enough, that just depends on what you need.
So what do you get out of this when you're done? You get just a new, like, so you feed it what it has or what you have, and then you say, all right, run it with this link broken. And what is the result from that? Run it with this link broken or whatever it is that you have there.
So the code will then, again, converge the model around the new topology, and the topology has changed because now you failed something. So now it may, let's say a link isn't available or maybe even a full node isn't available. You converge around that. And then, you know, a typical workflow might consist of converging the model, then say looking for interfaces above, say 90% utilization, if that's your threshold. Or 60% utilization. And then you can sort those quickly, and then you can do some really cool stuff like select a certain interface that has a high utilization, and then you can tell what traffic is driving that utilization, specifically what traffic. With an IGP network, it's very deterministic what traffic would be driving utilization on an interface. You can tell, yeah, this demand from LA to New York, that is making my Dallas to Chicago link, you know, that is driving 30% of the utilization on my 95% utilized link. So that's super helpful information as a planner and as an engineer as well. Then you can, you know, with RSVP LSPs, it becomes a little more statistical in nature because those are not necessarily deterministic in how they'll settle out. But you can still look for warning signs in your network like, you know, are all the LSPs signaling? Are all of them signaling for the bandwidth they need to carry? Stuff like that. So it will give you all this information to help you understand what is your network actually doing. Because oftentimes you don't realize what's going to happen until you see this in production. And it's always a surprise, especially with RSVP involved.
Right.
So who's using it? The people, I would assume the people who would want it already have tools that are quite expensive.
Yeah. So, you know, I did this just to provide options. I know there are some carriers at least using it alongside commercial solutions. I know that for certain because they've reached out to me and let me know. So there is that. There's also the idea I like of just, hey, if you're an engineer, the engineers don't tend to get a lot of money. You know, everything that the engineers get is considered a tool and a toy for the engineers to play with. But if you're an engineer who knows Python and who can gather some data, you can probably start to simulate and get value from it right away without necessarily having perfect input data. And you know, what I mean by that is that, you know, the network data itself is pretty trivial. Your network topology, that's pretty easy to get. The traffic matrix is the tougher part. But even an imperfect traffic matrix will start to provide value.
Yeah, I would have loved to have a tool like this a few jobs ago, building a large a large traffic engineer network, because trying to get the funding for the bigger tools is quite a challenge, and I just needed basic things. So
yeah, and having been a sales engineer in this space, I got to tell you, the value proposition for the commercial options is great. This is not here to try and replace those or, you know, in any way say they're not great. It's here just to give you another option, but those commercial options are really good. It's just a matter of, can the engineers or whomever needs it get funding for it? If you can't, here's another option.
Well, another thing I think this would be really useful for would be for the engineer who just wants to do it on their own time and learn how such a tool might work. so that when they stumble into a professional environment, they actually can say, yes, I've worked with this kind of tool before. It may not be the one you use in your shop, but it is a tool much like what you're doing. So I understand the value of this and what this can do.
Yeah, being familiar with the use cases for this is certainly helpful because it shows that you have an understanding of the network. Again, especially with RSVP, but at scaled IGP, just IGP only as well, where things are non-intuitive. And understanding that going in and being able to talk about how things can be non-intuitive, you know, provides a lot of insight for you and hopefully a lot of value for your employer.
Yeah, so that's pretty much what people would get out of this then, is to be able to load a traffic matrix. Now, you said they need to know Python. So how much Python is there involved in working on this or using this thing?
You know, I think if you just didn't really know Python right away, but you had, let's say, a traffic matrix and could create a topology file, you know, I think you could get started. I do have some training modules out there in GitHub that are just in PDF format that give nice screenshots of, hey, run this command to load the file, to load the model file. Okay, now you're, you know, converge the model, do it this way. Okay, now here's an example of how to find an interface and how to grab the utilization and the demands, the traffic demands that are egressing that interface. That's all there in the training modules. It's laid out really basically to let people start to use it, even if you don't necessarily know Python, you know, at an intermediate or expert level. With just a base knowledge, you'll be able to start using it.
All right, cool. So that's one thing I was going to say is that, you know, where do you get these? Are there example modules or not modules, but example traffic matrices and stuff like that people can download? Because I know I can see that being a problem for someone who doesn't necessarily have access to a network right now.
Yeah, in the repository, in the GitHub repository, there's an examples directory. And that directory has several example scripts and example model files, you know, that have the topology and traffic matrix information that you can just load, you know, run the script, see how it's loading the file, and then the script runs through a few different examples and workflows. So you can just look at the output of the script and the code in the script to get a further idea of this is how we use the API calls. This is what I should be looking for. Here are some common use cases. The scripts, the example scripts, and again, the training run through that. So I want the barrier to use to be very low because I think there's a lot of value here. So I've created these extra training materials for that purpose.
And I assume people could volunteer to help out with scripts and stuff like that if they, you know, because it's an open source project, right? This is all totally something that's community based or community, people from the community are working on it.
Yeah. It's all, I'm happy to take, help in a few different areas. One is just adding features. If you have the capability to add in a feature that's not there, for sure. Other areas of help I would definitely appreciate is, you know, data visualization, because there's a lot of data that these simulations create, a lot. And we're not holding on to all of it. Some of it has to be re-derived if you want to get it again, which isn't a big deal. But, maybe putting a database object in the model object itself would be helpful. And then, someone who's a expert in data visualization, understand the data, then find a slick way to visualize it. You know, all these are areas that I'm happy to accept help in.
Right. Because it is open source, right? It's just in GitHub. So you can just jump out there and play with it if you want to, or look at it and try it out.
Absolutely.
So now you envision this as primarily as a way to do people just looking at how their network works or understanding how their network works better. What about troubleshooting? Are there use cases in the troubleshooting realm that you could see people using this for?
So, it depends what you mean by troubleshooting and what you're troubleshooting. It does help. You know, let me start with this use case. Having worked with simulators for many years in the industry when I was a sales engineer in the space, what I found was a lot of times you see non-intuitive results. You know, you see results in a simulation that just don't appear to make sense. But when you look at it closer, it actually is making sense. It's just non-intuitive behavior. So understanding the types of non-intuitive behavior you run into helps you understand what might happen in production and to not necessarily be surprised in production. So it does, I look at it like a flight simulator, Russ. It's, you know, the more reps you get in that simulator, the better you're going to understand what happens, what goes wrong, and you'll be more prepared for it when it happens in real life. That's a network, wide area network simulator is the exact same thing. It made me definitely a better network engineer.
It's really interesting. I mean, now you're making me want to go out and play with it a little bit, because this is a particular tool that I have not played with a lot, is not just this type of tool, but in general, this particular tool would be really interesting to play with because it is open source. And you're saying it runs on pretty much base level hardware, nothing's fancy, nothing crazy required type of thing.
I'm developing on a 3-year-old MacBook Air. It's fine. It works. It works great. It's Python. So it's just going to work where you run Python. The big difference is going to be the performance, you know, to converge the model. That is something you want to spend a little bit more for if you need quick convergence.
Okay. Interesting. So you have some videos out there on how to get this, right? Or how to install it and how to run it so that people who aren't as familiar with Python can do that sort of thing, which is really important, by the way, because a lot of people just get lost in figuring code out and how to install things. I know a lot of people that I know, they get blocked just trying to get something like FR routing up and running in anything. You know, just to even get it up and running is very difficult sometimes. So having those types of resources is really useful. So you're saying that's all available for people who want to try it.
Yeah, and the training is it's in the form of PDF format with a bunch of screenshots and code snippets, just walking you through. Here's the file. Here's how you load the file. Here's how you install PyNTM. Here's how you load a model file. Here's something you might want to do. So I try to make it as basic as possible because from someone who learns from very basic things, that was really important to me.
Yeah, I was just looking through the PDF slides on your GitHub repo there, Tim. They look great. The illustrations are nice. And yeah, this is all like looking at this from the standpoint, like I understand traffic engineering and RSVP. So I look at these diagrams. I'm like, oh, okay. I know what you're doing. This is, yeah, it looks good.
Good. Yeah. So, you know, I encourage people, and even if you don't know what network modeling is about, you're not necessarily interested, looking at those training files in the PDF format gives you an understanding of what PyNTM does. And just even understanding the use case, again, can be super helpful.
Right. Yeah, sounds like it. Sounds like it would be something that we should all be playing with. So any other projects you're working on besides PyNTM recently, or is this the primary thing that you play with on your spare time? Building models.
other than Lego sets back here, yeah.
Yes, Lego sets.
This is PyNTM is the project I'm working on right now. It comes in fits and spurts as I have the time and, you know, motivation and mental cycles to go in and you know, code WAN behavior, which can be exhausting. But I'm getting ready to release the version with that handles RSVP IGP shortcuts. So that code is substantially done. I'm just going to do the unit testing. Hopefully I don't uncover anything there, but I definitely want to validate with the unit testing that it's all the functionality is there. And that should be released, I don't know, probably within the next month or so. And you know, that's actually reminds me of something I also want to make clear to the listeners and anyone who might be thinking of using this is there's a very extensive unit testing infrastructure set up to make sure that I don't break anything as I'm adding new things. There's hundreds of unit tests there that run, you know, whenever I run a commit to make sure I'm not breaking something, because reliability it's very important. You can't just break stuff along the way. So I want to point that out as well. Okay. It's a real project with real unit testing, real doc strings, real documentation. It's all there.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, I think that pretty much covers everything that I can ask. Anything that you have there, Tom, before we wrap up?
No, this has been great.
Great. Awesome. All right. And Tim, where can people get in touch with you if they want to? Say that they just wanted to talk to you about this project, or they wanted to participate, or you had, I don't know, they just wanted to talk to you about your Lego models. I don't know, whatever it is. Is it, do you have a blog, or do you have anything else that you work from?
You know, the best way to reach me on social media is LinkedIn. I'm active on LinkedIn. You know, I also do some blogging. I've done a couple blogs for the APNIC site. And I just published my first blog on packet pushers the other day, 2 days ago. So, you know, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn if there's anything you'd like to talk about, because I like to talk about all the things we've talked about, including Star Wars Lego sets.
And what was your blog post on packet pushers about? Was it about Pyantium?
No, the one on packet pushers was about you have this, you know, it's called a kind of a paradox with a triangle. You have cheap, fast, and reliable. Choose two. The blog discusses, can coding and automation get you all three? So it dives into that. Because, you know, the coding and automation are unique because they act on all sides of that triangle. Not a whole lot of other things do. So it's an interesting conversation, interesting thought. Exercise at a minimum.
Ah, and what was your answer? Yes or no?
Well, you know,
read the blog.
You know, there's a lot of nuances to that conversation, but it can definitely improve all three. Whether it can, you know, get you to all three in the triangle, possibly. I make the case that it can, but you know, again, there's a lot of fuzziness in those details. A lot of nuance to that.
Interesting. Yeah. Cause I would probably say no.
Yeah, no, it's called that paradox for a reason, because right, it's thought to not be able to do it. But when something new comes away, new comes along that changes the way we do things, can it get you there? And, you know, I make an argument that even if it does get you there, you're likely to lose one of those traits as people understand, oh, we have automation now and we can readjust our resources accordingly. Well, that readjustment of resources might mean your resources aren't enough to have all three now. So it also discusses changing expectations that automation and coding bring to the equation.
Yeah. Interesting. All right, cool. All right. Well, thanks, Tim, for coming on. And we'll point people at your LinkedIn page, and we'll point people at the GitHub repository so that people can go check this out, and I'll play with it maybe some and blog a little bit about it so that people will understand it better when they start messing with it. So awesome. All right. Well, thanks. And thanks for joining us for this episode of The Edge. Oh, Tom, where can people get in touch with you?
I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter. On Twitter, I'm Tom Ammon.
Okay. I always, you know, I guess I just say it so much that I forget you now.
It's okay.
And I already know you don't blog.
Oh, come on.
Awesome. All right. All right, thanks, Tim, and thanks, Tom, and we'll see you next time on The Hedge.
Thank you for having me.
Subscribe to The Hedge on your favorite podcast service or follow along at rule11.tech.